I had an amendment up there, and I went up there and I said, Johnson, I'm doing this because of politics. I don't really care about putting this house on record on my amendment. And he said, okay. He wrote non-germane on it and handed it to me.
Oh, solved everything, huh? Yeah. I tell you, Bob called me one night about 11 o'clock. My phone rang at home. I'd been out 2 or 3 years, and he called me and said, Shannon, I want to tell you, I'm just calling a few people, and there was a bill passed today that'll be signed this week. And he said it permits people to go back and pick up their retirement from days gone by. And he said, I'm just calling a handful of people, and I'm calling you. And I said, my God, thank you. I actually picked up 4 years of service with this little bill because I had been sworn in 64 in November, and I didn't leave until 71 in January. And so I picked up, if any part of a year, you get the whole year.
Yeah.
So I wound up picking up some extra time for very little time. And Bob called me, and the parliamentarian called me, and saved me a pretty good slug of money.
That was one of Bullock's bills.
Uh-huh. It worked out well.
Yeah.
Sounds like he was a good parliamentarian then.
Well, he took care of me.
What are we going to talk about?
So if we can just start by y'all giving us your names, the district you represented.
And what?
The district that you represented.
Okay.
And sort of the area that was within that district, and then the years that you served.
All right.
Please.
My name is Joe Shannon, Jr., and I was a representative from Tarrant County. At that time, we did not have single-member districts, and so I represented all of Tarrant County, and there were seven of us who...
And I'll have to say, he did it well.
I came to the 59th legislature, was there 59th, 60th, 61st, and I actually got sworn in 64 and actually left in 71.
Great.
My name is Don Adams, and I was elected to the House of Representatives in 1968, took office in 1969. I served two sessions in the House, and I served 6 years in the Senate. My House district was Jasper, Newton, Tyler, and Hardin counties. Hardin County was a hard county, too. And I served with Joe. That's in southeast Texas. And I was lucky enough, my wife and I didn't have any children. We moved up here. The only apartment house in Austin where you could stay for ever how long you wanted to after having to sign a 6-month lease was on Riverside Drive. And my wife and I rented a 1-bedroom apartment there. And it just happened to be in the same building as Joe Shannon. And we got to know one another with another guy named Lynn Neighbors from Brownwood, Texas, and Tom Christian from somewhere Amarillo. Around Oklahoma.
Amarillo.
Yeah.
Clearly, somewhere like that.
Yeah. And that was fortuitous for me because Joe Shannon was really, he and I became very good friends, as did Lynn Neighbors, and he helped me. When I was a freshman legislator, I was too green to burn. As a matter of fact, I never intended to go to the legislature. The first time I ever saw the legislature in session was when I was sworn in. My great-grandfather, my grandfather, and my father were district attorneys of the 1st Judicial District and then judges of the 1st Judicial District. And my idea was to go be a district attorney and then be a district judge and then retire in Jasper. And an appointment came up, and John Conley didn't appoint me, so I decided that I would run for the legislature just so I could give John Conley hell. And he didn't run. So that's how I got here.
Wow. So can y'all tell me a little bit about the 61st session and what was going on at that time?
I started in 59. I was here 59, 60, and 61. And in the 61st session, I was chairman of the counties committee. And we wound up with a lot of local bills, which, you know, gave you a chance to help different representatives around the state get their local business handled, because that's one big thing that when you come down here, if you don't take care of the local folks, you're not apt to be back. And so it put me in a pretty good position to pass a lot of bills, most of which were, you know, not controversial. We had some controversial bills come through, and that session was I think all in all pretty harmonious. There were a few bills that were always contentious, just like there always is, but I would point this out, that back in those days, and that would have been started in 69, we did pass the first section of the Texas Family Code back in 1969. And the thing about it is, I think that the legislature was a lot more collegial at the time. The members were. I mean, we had liberals and conservatives just like they do now, except there was not the partisanship that there is now. And nowadays, I think, unfortunately, and I think we've been infected by Congress to some degree, and I think whatever disease they've got is infectious, but it's come down here, and a lot of people don't get along personally like they used to. And we used to fight like hell and go out and have a drink together stuff. And that was really, you know, not bad at all. And, you know, you knew how somebody was going to vote. And fine, he voted like his district was, and I voted like my district's. Like Don said, he couldn't vote for any alcohol bills because he lived down there where everything was dry as a bone. They drank a lot. But that's kind of like my grandfather, who was a former Baptist parishioner. And he talked about, you don't ever take a Baptist fishing with you without another Baptist, because if you do, he'll drink all the beer. But anyway, that's kind of what we did. And in that period of time, it was, we had a lot of, I can't remember anything that was horrible. I think we passed a tax bill that year, but
in a special session, yeah.
Yes, that was it. Oh, I remember we had liquor by the drink. That was a big contentious deal.
Yes, it was.
And as a matter of fact, the package stores were very much opposed to liquor by the drink because they wanted to sell it by the bottle. And so they didn't want the restaurants selling it by the drink. And so there was a lot of, shall we say, economic collisions over that. But the bill finally did pass. And I think we did authorize daylight saving time that year, didn't we, Don?
Something we like did.
That. Yeah, I thought so.
I remember John Perner and someone from the Valley got up to try to exempt us from daylight savings. And Bob Johnson, who was a parliamentarian, had let me and Lynn Neighbors come up to the members' lounge on Tuesdays or Wednesdays about 7 o'clock. He would teach us the rules. And that was a very good experience for me, I'll tell you. Well, Perner didn't have the votes, so he moved to put the bill exempting Texas from daylight saving time. He moved to spread it on the journal. And that's a parliamentary move to keep it alive, because he can then work the floor, hopefully, and then call it off the journal. And Bob had told me that morning, he said, now when somebody does that and you're against the bill, you jump up and call it from the journal right then so he doesn't have time to work the floor. And so I jumped up and called that bill off the table, and we killed it.
I remember getting killed because we had I tell you what, I had a letter from a constituent that year, and he was no boy I'd known a long time, and I got this letter one day, and I opened it up, and of course it was the restaurant people were opposed to it, the drive-in movie were people opposed to it. But anyway, you know, I kind of felt like we need to be in step with the rest of the union, you know, it was kind of weird not to be, and so I was going to vote for it. And he wrote me a letter and says, listen, Shannon, he said, I've known you a long time, and you know it's hot in summer in Texas. And he said, I can't stand another hour of hot sun on my head. I thought, my God, we got the power to roll back the sun around here. I didn't know it.
Well, it was very important to my district because it's a district that has a lot of people that come down there to fish and stuff like that, eat catfish. And so, you know, the having a little extra sun gave them a little extra time to fish. And besides that, it would have really fouled up the bus schedules and the train schedules and the airplane schedules, because we would have been on one time and the rest of the country would have been on another time. And anyway.
It passed pretty heavy, I think. Yeah.
Joe is absolutely right. That the session that I started in 1969 was a very harmonious session. There was not a lot of, you know, there was the same back and forth with Democrats, with conservatives and liberals, and but nobody got mad. There was only one Republican on the floor that I couldn't stand. That was Maurice Angley. I couldn't stand Maurice Angley. But other than that, I didn't care whether somebody was Republican or Democrat. I really didn't care whether they were liberal or conservative, as long as they were voting their district. That's what they were sent up here to do.
When I got here, there was one Republican my first term, and that was Frank Cahoon from Midland, and he was Tom Craddock's predecessor. Mm-hmm. And Tom then came my third year, and I think the same year Don came. And we only had one, and then I think later we had two. Maurice was from Austin. And we didn't label ourselves. It wasn't labels. I mean, most of us tried to avoid labels. And that was kind of how it was then. And it's not that way now. The beliefs are still the same. Well, I was told a lot of people, we just had our arguments in the spring at the primary rather than at the fall at the general election, but the same arguments most of the time.
I never had a Republican opponent. I had Democrat opponents, but no Republicans.
Right. Am I correct in the fact that y'all are both attorneys?
Yes.
Both studied law. How did that help you or hurt you? I'm assuming it helped you in legislating.
Well, I was fortunate to serve on criminal jurisprudence for three terms and also on judiciary, and those are where most of the legal bills go, and being a lawyer is very helpful in those areas, particularly. I think there's a lot of committees and stuff where probably being a lawyer is a hindrance, but I think all in all, I think anybody who's ever studied the law in law school likes to see how their sausage gets made, you know. And if you get a view on what really works and how it really gets made here, you get a world of difference in how you need to apply those laws sometimes. And some laws get made. I taught in law school for about 15 years, and I told them, I said, you know, the law is really just a thing mostly of what's fair. It's what people do and what's right and that sort of thing they accept when the legislature gets in the mix. And then it's not necessarily always fair.
Right.
It's not necessarily logical.
That's right.
Right. Well,
Joe, you remember that Frank Calhoun passed this huge bill amending 6701D, the traffic code. And somehow it got in there that cotton trailers had to have brakes. Well, that was not a good thing to have done. If you were from up around the panhandle or somewhere, they raised cotton.
Cotton country, yeah.
They didn't raise anything in Jasper but hell. But anyway, I mean, people like Billy Clayton and Tom Christian were crying to come back down here and get that out of that bill. I'd never read 6701D. I didn't read it when we passed it. It was too big. And we did get called back, and I was appointed chairman of the subcommittee that was supposed to take care of that. I was on the county's committee, too. And Bob, the young guy that was in the legislative council, I can't think of his last name. He was the smartest lawyer I ever knew in my life, except for me and Joe. And he fixed it. And, you know, I had to get up and explain it. Well, I didn't know, have any idea what I was explaining, but I just mumbled it through. And we fixed it. But it was a contentious thing.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that, like I said, the government is local and your local people they get impacted quickly by some little nondescript something most everybody doesn't pay any attention to. And it becomes, that's where the rubber really meets the road when you go back home and meet the folks. You know, you go into a coffee shop and about six of them jump you. You know, it's, what are you doing? Well, I don't know, what am I doing?
But it was my practice at the end of every session, whether I was in the House or the Senate, I went home and I started on the speaking tour because I wanted everybody to get their questions out before I had to run again. And it was pretty successful.
That's pretty smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But now they're having these town hall meetings and nobody gets a word in edgewise. I'm not sure that theory would work today, Don. But
no, I don't think it would. But then everything was gentler then, I think. Life was gentler.
Do y'all see any ways that we could improve the political system right now in Texas?
Well, I'll tell you what, there's not an easy fix. I do think this, that there needs to be some nonpartisan ballots. I don't think it matters whether you're a Democrat or Republican for you to be elected judge or be elected district attorney or anything like that. I don't think anybody prosecutes or judges a case based on somebody's party affiliation. I think it's sad that people will vote with a party affiliation when the job itself requires no
judgment. When they have no idea who they're voting for.
Well, and right, and a lot of those jobs require no partisan judgmental exercise at all. I mean, you know, if the police bring a case in and they file it, and I served later 5 years for district attorney in Tarrant County, and, you know, I don't think I ever knew what political party any defendant was in. We had 45,000 cases a year. There's no way I could know, and didn't care. Right. So, but I think that would be a positive improvement from the standpoint of the voters, because it doesn't matter, you know. To me, it doesn't. Maybe there's a lot of people it does. It doesn't to me.
It shouldn't matter. Mm-hmm. Joe, you'll be proud of me because I introduced a bill in the Senate, 3 running sessions to put the Missouri plan in for, and I couldn't pass it out. I couldn't pass it out of the Senate.
And the problem with that is that it's all in whose wheel is in the ditch. The people that are in office don't want to change anything because they've got there under the old system. And the people who are out do want to change it. And then when the people that are out get in, they don't want to change it. So, I mean, you're not going to win that battle.
I mean,
the turf keeps changing.
I didn't.
I know. Well, you had a good idea, but, you know. There's all sides to all questions. But, I mean, if you're going to have an elected judiciary, which obviously we're still going to have, then perhaps a separate ballot would be a good thing.
Or at least keep it from being a one pull.
Yeah, exactly.
So that you have to go down to the bottom of the ballot and make a decision, even though I'm not sure that helps a lot. It just keeps it from being a total party vote.
Yeah, we ought not to elect our local officials based on which way the winds are blowing on the Potomac, you know, which is what happens, you know, it really does.
Yeah.
On either side, I mean, that's not peculiar to any one party or anything else. It's just, you know, one year the winds blow north and the next year they blow south, how can I say?
Right.
But these are just, you know, just a few things. I was fortunate enough to serve on my first session, I served on the Committee of Criminal Jurisprudence that enacted the existing Code of Criminal Procedure, and I got the pleasure to work with a lot of really good lawyers and judges and things like that, and we finally put that thing to bed, and it's still in place. It's been amended about 8,000 times. But
the
still
Code
there.
Of Criminal Procedure and the Penal Code?
The Code of Criminal Procedure was in 65, and we're still using the same one. The Penal Code was changed in 72. 73, okay.
Yeah.
And but there's still a lot of talk right now about amending or modifying, recodifying, shall we say, the Code of Criminal Procedure. I don't know if it's going to get any traction. I haven't heard anything about it this session. That's a real job,
Jim Nugent, who was a member of the House, a powerful member of the House, was appointed chairman of an interim committee in 1971, I believe. No, in 1970, along with Carol Vance, who was district attorney of Harris County, and Phil Burleson, who was the only lawyer that represented the guy that killed Oswald, from beginning to end. And I was on that committee, and we traveled all over the state and took testimony about the penal code. But Henry, what's his name up in Dallas?
Wade.
Henry Wade bought time on the radio station in Jasper, beating me about the head and shoulders. I didn't know Henry Wade. He didn't know me. He just didn't like what we were doing.
Right.
And so we got down here in 71, and Nugent introduced the product of that interim committee, and I didn't want to vote on it. So I ran a poll of the House, and I put in the seating chart those people that were no, I put it in red, and those people green, I put it in green, that were for it, I put it in green. And the red always overwhelms the green. And I took it to him. I said, Jim, I said, you can't pass this bill. And he looked at it and he said, well, I think you're right. So he didn't bring it up. But then we did pass it in 73.
There's been a lot of changes. And I think, too, that, you know, we like to think we dealt with some heavy-duty problems, but I know the existing members today still feel like we're doing a lot of heavy listening, too.
Yes.
So it's just all in your viewpoint and your perspective. And
well, it's
times
all in
change.
The time you were there.
Exactly.
You know, golly, to think that the state budget was 120 or $30 billion when we were passing.
Yeah, and that all starts with a B.
Yeah.
Right.
When we were passing budgets, I don't remember what they were, but they weren't anywhere close to that.
Right.
And, you know, we passed a couple of tax bills, I believe.
Were you there when we had a big fight over letting the cities collect a piece of sales tax?
Oh, yeah.
Now, you talk about a contentious one. the cities never collected sales tax, and suddenly the cities decided they wanted to get in on the state sales tax. And the Texas Municipal League was pushing the thing, and there was a number of us, and I was opposed to it. My position was the state needs the sales tax, give the cities the property tax, let the federal government take the income tax, and then, you know. But all the cities wanted a piece of the action. And they got a small percentage, and of course,
1%.
About four times they've upped it, I think. But, you know, I argue the fact that we don't really need to be giving away part of the state's tax base because we're going to maybe eventually need it.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough,
and
I really believe that's what's happened.
Right.
And it was quite a contentious battle. It was a real big. I remember John Traeger and Billy Clayton were on one side and Temple Dixon and I were on the other. And it was hot. I mean, we were friends. So we laughed about it.
Mm-hmm.
We got a picture. I've got a picture of four of us standing in front of the Ross and two of us holding up one finger and two of them holding up two fingers. And we got the house photographer to take a picture of all four of us up there because that's how we were telling our troops how to vote on all the amendments.
I just tried to stay out of the way.
That was smart. I don't know why I got involved. I know why I got involved because Temple was my office mate at the time. And he sucked me into it. Did I ever tell you about, I'm going to tell one more story and
okay.
I'm going to quit.
Yeah, we're getting close to 11, but
okay,
you
well,
go,
let me tell you,
go on.
There was a time when Temple Dempson went on to serve in the Senate. I think you served with Temple, or did he serve
no,
after?
No, he came
there?
After.
Did
I
he?
Left,
yeah. He was a member of the House, and he later defeated a senator named Grant Jones, who Don and I had both served with, too. And Temple, he came back from Sweetwater, and he was emptying his pockets on his desk, and he pulled out a bunch of green stamps. And you probably don't even know what a green stamp is. It was a giveaway stamp. You'd lick them, and my mother would have me help lick them and give them. You go to the store and buy a blender or something, you know. And he had all these stamps all over his desk. He said, these dad-blame stamps, they just get in your way. And we were voting on a tax bill at the time. And the House had been, they'd worked the House. They'd vote against all amendments. So it was one of those things. I didn't care if you put an amendment up there to decide that Christ was the Son of God. They'd have voted against it. And it was going on. And Temple and I were sitting there thinking, you know, what do we do with all these extra green stamps that they don't redeem? You know, what do we do? They just get them. And so Temple and I decided, well, let's just draw up a little bill to make them escheat to the state. You know, and so they don't cash them in. They got to turn them in after 7 years, just like you do bank accounts, you know, that are dormant. And so Temple and I drew this amendment up. We got it up there. And we threw it up on the deal, and it came up time to vote it, and everybody said, vote against all amendments. Temple and I got up there and lathered them up about these stamps. They're just going to waste. The state needs to get the money. And anyway, and it was one of those days, and you can feel it sometimes when you're on the floor. The House is just surly. They're not happy voting on a tax bill. They're about two-thirds really grumpy, bad, all over. And that was one of those things, it was like throwing raw meat into a lion's cage. Suddenly it took life, and it got going and everything. And we passed that amendment and put it on the tax bill and sent it to the Senate. And there was a lobbyist friend of mine sitting up there with one of the lobbyists for the green stamp company, and he leaned over to him and said, you just got had. And then the bill went over to the Senate. Of course, they stripped it out. And I'll tell you the repercussion of Ben Barnes was a speaker. And so the story goes, I heard it indirectly, that he got a call the next day from Lyndon Johnson, who was at that time the president of the United States. Says, what in the hell are you people doing down there? And so he had gotten a call from Howard E. Butt, who was in charge of all the HEB stores. That were his stores. He had little gold stamps. He didn't use green stamps, but he had his own stamp company because he didn't want to pay money to green people. And so at any rate, Butt had called Lyndon. Lyndon called Ben Barnes. And Barnes, he called me and called him, what is the matter with you people? Well, yeah, we just throw a little something out there. And so,
really good idea.
You know, and somebody come along and says, all you did is make a bunch of senators rich. And needless to say, it got stripped out. It did not even show up in the conference bill, nor was it ever even discussed. That's just one of those little, if you catch the House in the right mood, mm-hmm. you can get something done if you strike the right match. Mm-hmm. I'll shut up.
Well, I never got called. The only bill that I ever got called on for voting for was not a tax bill. I never got chastised about a tax bill when I went on. But there was Bud Atwood. You remember Bud
Atwood? Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lindsey Rodriguez mm-hmm. and put a resolution up congratulating the farm worker out of California. I forget his name.
Cesar Chavez.
Yeah, Eddie Chavez.
Yeah, letter picker.
And Bud Atwood put one up congratulating an old Texas Ranger who was hated by the Hispanics, Lone Wolf Gonzalez. And I thought, why am I sitting here voting on this stuff? It doesn't make a bit of difference. So I just voted against both of them. Well, when I was running for the Senate, I was accused of voting against the Rangers. That was a big hill to climb.
Well, when I was running for the Senate, I got accused of voting for busing of school children because I had voted against a resolution that Bill Archer put up telling the Houston school district not to bus the kids. And I voted against it because I felt like that's a decision that will be made at home and we ought not to be telling them what to do. Well, damn if they didn't twist that around and say, I voted for busing little bitty school kids across town.
Oh, man.
So, you never know what kind of landmines you're going to step on and they blow your leg off and you don't even know it until you get in the next race.
Right.
Anyway. But
well.
We've talked more than what you probably wanted.
Oh, no, we want more, but y'all better get down to the more fun things.
It'll probably be another 45 minutes before they get to us. So
I haven't checked in yet. Where do you check in?
Oh, out on the lawn, but
they don't really
do anything but say, yeah, we're glad you're here.
Yeah.
Well, so, we are glad you're here. Yeah. And thank you so much.
I think this is a wonderful. Great program. Is this being done strictly by the speaker's
uh-huh.
office or who?
Okay. Yep,
well, tell
office.
Speaker, I think it's just a tremendous idea.
We will. It is.
Because I figured you picked us because we were old.
No, because y'all are interesting.
You know, and but I'm glad you did because, you know, I think...
Particularly us together.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we love
have
that.
Been friends for uh-huh. nice
well, like 40 years or something. Anyway, I think
like
it's great.
50
years. Oh, my God. What the thing about it is, you don't preserve this history, it goes away.
Exactly. Yes,
it's really important.
Exactly.
Now, whether anybody ever listened to it or not, who knows? But at the same time, it's least available.
Yes.
And how it's handled.
Where will you file it?
I'm not
state,
sure.
State That's, library, maybe?
I think maybe,
archives?
Yeah. Right? We're just sort of compiling it right now. I don't know that
well,
we figured out exactly what we're going to do with it.
We'll probably take it. You
yeah.
know, but
uh-huh,
I mean,
absolutely.
You probably need to, is it going to be on a DVD, or do you know?
I'm not sure. I think they,
well,
I don't
you know.
Digital
what? Just a
somehow.
Suggestion, pass it along to the speaker or staff or whoever, that I think it'd be a super idea if you, once you collected all of them for this year or whatever, you could burn them to a CD and at least give the former members an opportunity to buy it, because it might, you might listen to it and find some interesting things.
Oh, yeah.
And,
well,
I would like to listen to it.
I would, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the parliamentarian now, Chris Griesel, wants to maybe use some of them for, you know, freshman members. Hey,
well,
let's
I want
to
tell you that I am a yellow dog Democrat. I have been, I am, and I will be. I'm too old to change. But I want you to know that I think this speaker is the finest speaker we have had in a long time.
And I tell you what, he walks the middle of the road very carefully and does a good job.
He does. And he does a good job. And it's almost comical to try to compare him to maybe some other statewide.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I really do. And I, like I said, I don't, Hardress only met him a couple of times, but I think he's doing a fine job. And,
yeah.
But anyway, you can pass that on to the parliamentarian for
okay.
whatever it's worth.
That sounds like a great
not
idea.
Not that matters, but.
No, it does. Thank
you
all so
thank
much.
You, Mia. Appreciate it. Nice
thank
to
you.
See you guys.
Nice to meet you.